What are you afraid of? That question was put to me back in 1980. Probably the worst year of my life, the darkest year of my life, 1980. I was in a full-blown psychological crisis. I had spent the decade of my 20s running. I had finally come, in 1980, I'd finally come to a decision that I would enter the ministry and was already accepted at seminary. But all of that thought threw me into a crisis. I look back on it, and it seems like to me, I have a daughter who suffers from panic attacks. And it seems like to me, back in the 80s, they didn't call it that, but it seemed like to me, if I can think about it, it was just one long panic attack. I was just deadly afraid of what taking on that responsibility. But the thing about it was, I didn't know it was fear. Believe it or not, I was that unconscious until this family friend said to me, "What are you afraid of?" And then it was like the light came on. And I realized, oh my gosh, this is fear I'm dealing with. I mean, believe it or not, we can be that out of touch and unconscious about our own inner lives. And I was at that time. I didn't know that it was this. I didn't know it was fear. And secondly, I didn't know what the fear was. What are you afraid of? Well, I didn't really know what I was afraid of. And only later did I realize what it was that I was so afraid of. And believe it or not, the fear that I had was what I'm doing right now. Standing up in front of people and talking to them. A lot of us have that fear. Some people don't. I like it when people have a little bit of that fear. I don't like cocky people in the pulpit. I mean, that's just me. But fear of speaking in front. They call it speech anxiety. But for me, it was more than anxiety, it was a phobia. And as I thought about it and explored the sources of that fear and that dread, it was terrifying, the thought of it. I realized it went back to the fifth grade. That's where it started. Because of an incident that occurred in the classroom in the fifth grade. We were doing long division at the time. And we were given a homework assignment to do a series of long division problems. Well, I didn't do my homework because I hated homework. And I'd rather be outside playing, so I'd lie to my parents. And they'd say, "Have you done your homework?" I'd say, "Yeah." And then I'd go outside and play. So needless to say, next day in class, I wasn't prepared to do the long division demonstration. I wasn't expecting the teacher to say, "All right, I want you to come to the board and do your problem on the board for the class to see." And so she called us row by row to go up to the chalkboard and work out our problem. And then when we were finished, we could sit down. Well, it came my turn to do it. And I went up to the chalkboard, and I just stood there with a piece of chalk in my hand looking at this thing on the board. It might as well have been Chinese arithmetic because I had no idea where to begin. I wasn't prepared. Well, all my other classmates took their seats, and I was standing there staring at this long division problem. And I stood there, and the room got silent. And finally, I started to cry. And the crying turned into sobs, heaving sobs. So there I was, with my back to my classmates, my peers, sobbing like a baby. And finally, after what seemed like an eternity, the teacher said, and this is what she said, "Sit down, stupid. You're never going to learn math." Well, you know, that was a surface wound. The math, you know, I went on, I did math. I learned how to add, subtract. But it was my self-esteem that was just absolutely shattered in that moment, and my self-confidence, and my ego. And when I think about my fear of getting up in front of people and speaking, it all goes back to that. That's the source of it's. And I tell you, it was more than just, you know, we all have normal, natural fears of getting up in front of people. That's normal. But my fear went beyond normal. I was absolutely terrified of speaking in front of people because of that incident. I thought I'd have a breakdown. And the first time I was asked to speak, the very first time I was asked to speak, I almost fainted. And I got up to the pulpit, and I had a robe on, and people couldn't see me behind the pulpit, but my legs were going like this. I was so scared. But as I said earlier, you know, at the time, I didn't know it was the fear, and I didn't know exactly what the fear was of. It didn't have a face on it. And then when that family friend, it was a family friend that said to me, "What are you so afraid of?" And he was like, a light came on. And I thought, okay, it's fear. And then I had to go on to put a face on it and say, well, what exactly is it that I'm afraid of? You know, and that only came later. And when I'd share that with people, I'd say, you know, I'm so afraid to get up in front of people. People would say, oh, you look so comfortable up there. Well, I tell you, it scares the hell out of me to be up here. And it still does. So, I mean, I always had those flashbacks, those feelings. But people would say, oh, you know, you can deal with that. Just there's some tricks. You can just look at everybody as if they're naked. And, you know, that didn't work for me. Or, you know, focus on a friendly face and just focus on that. Well, that didn't work for me. Then somebody said to me, oh, you need to be more God conscious. Well, I didn't know what that meant. So anyway, it was this fear, putting this face on this fear and coming to grips with it, naming it. And as I said earlier, it was, when I think about it, it was like this one long series of just panic, fear. Panic, by the way, comes from the Greek god Pan. Our word panic, our word phobia comes from the Greek god Phobos. And if you really want to learn a lot about the emotional effects, you can read about those Greek myths because they tell you more than our abstract concepts such as panic and phobia tell us. The Greek myths will tell you more. Read about the life of Pan, the life of Phobos, and what they do. The Greeks embodied their ideas and their emotions in gods and goddesses because that's what the emotions are. They are powerful, powerful beings. We didn't create them. They live in us. I didn't create my emotions. They live in me. I didn't create fear. Fear lives in me. It lives in you. We all have our struggles one way or another with emotions, particularly with fear. We all struggle with fear, whether it's fear of failure or fear of death. Woody Allen, everybody knows Woody Allen said, I'm not afraid to die. I just don't want to be there when it happens. We don't have the emotions, they have us. Remember that. Particularly fear. We don't have fear. Fear can have us in its grip. Suzanne Langer, in her book, Philosophy in a New Key, says this: the driving force in human minds is fear. The driving force in human minds is fear. The driving force in human minds is fear. There, I said it three times. People remember it if you say it three times. And she goes on to say, this fear begets a demand. These are her words. Begets a demand for security in the world's confusion. A demand for a world picture that fills all experience and gives each individual a definite orientation amid the terrifying forces of nature and society. To me, that's the basic definition of religion. Religion is fear-based. Now, there's nothing wrong with fear. Fear can be a good thing. They're good fears. They're what we call protective fears. You see a mother bear robbed of her cub, you're going to run. That's a good fear. That's a fear that can keep you alive. Fear can be a great motivator. But there are fears that can destroy our lives totally. Things that we're afraid of that we really don't need to be afraid of, but we let them rob us of our lives and destroy our lives. Fear is the mother of all emotions. If you dig beneath greed or hatred or envy or spite, if you dig beneath those, you'll get to the bedrock. It's fear. We are a fear-driven species. And as I said, some of those fears keep us alive. They keep our ancestors alive. Kept our ancestors alive. They keep us alive. Some fears are destructive. And that's what you and I as individuals need to do ourselves, to struggle. Am I really afraid of what I need to fear? Or are my fears, do I have these irrational fears that are robbing me of fulfilling my greatest potentials? You know, I'm not a Christian any longer, but I still believe in the teachings of Jesus. And Jesus told a parable about three men, and they're given talents. One's given six, one's given four, one's given one. He says, here's your talent. Go out in the world and use it. And they go out in the world, and he says, go out and invest it. They invest their talents. And they come back later, and the fellow was given six talents and says, here's more talents to add to the six. And same with the second fellow. He comes back, four talents. I've added more talents. But the third one said, I buried my talent because I was afraid. Are you burying your best self because you're afraid? And you're afraid of what you don't need to be afraid of. The driving force in human minds is fear. This fear begets a demand for a world picture that fills all experience and gives each individual a definite orientation amid the terrifying forces of nature and society. She goes on to say, objects that embody such insights and acts which express, preserve, and reiterate these insights are more interesting, more serious than work. I mean, you look at primitive ritual. The ritual is more important than the actual thing. The hunting ritual was more important than the hunt itself, because it dealt with the fears. The rituals of planting in primitive agricultural societies, the rituals of planting were just as, if not more important than the actual planting itself, because these rituals were psychological preparations for these actions. More interesting, more serious than the work itself. Fear not only can grip individuals, it can grip entire nations of people. The only thing we have to fear as a nation is fear itself. He's addressing the whole nation, Roosevelt. Perhaps you've read the book, The Age of Anxiety. So the age is one of anxiety. And some people believe we're still in the age of anxiety. PBS had a program several weeks ago, 15 Years of Terror. Did anyone see that? It was an ANOVA special. 15 years, Miles O'Brien. I like Miles. 15 years of terror. He talked about 15 years of terror in America. You know, the terrorists, their goal is not simply to kill people. Their goal is to make us a nation under terror. And if we're not careful, we're letting them win the war. You know, we become fearful, then we become hateful. Martin Luther King's, we fear what we hate. We hate what we fear because we don't know it. I need to say something funny. I just feel like I need to say something funny. I mean, this is getting too heavy. So these two guys are camping out. They're hunting. And suddenly it's nighttime. They hit a little fire. And suddenly a grizzly bear walks out of the woods. And they take off running. And the first guy's getting ahead of the second guy. And the second guy yells out. The first guy says, "I hope this bear has religion." Well, sure enough, the bear caught up with the second guy, put his foot on him, put his paws together, lifted his head, and said, "Thank you, Lord, for this meal of which I'm about to partake of." Normal thing to do when you see a bear, you run. You know, I can't stand those cartoons where they, and sometimes those movies where they see something really dangerous, and they're going, You know, or the cartoon character spins his legs a lot before he runs, you know. It's like I jumped on a rattlesnake one time out in the forest. Fortunately, it was under a pallet. But when I jumped on the pallet, I heard the rattle automatically, and I didn't say, "Well, gosh, that might be a rattlesnake." I jumped. I just didn't think about it. I just was automatic. I jumped. Then I realized I was jumping because it was a rattlesnake. So, you know, fear of bears, fear of snakes, those are natural things. It was not until the 17th century that the first scientific approach to the emotions, particularly fear, was done. Up until that time, it was believed that the emotions and something like fear was a product of the mind, that you had the mind first, and then you had the emotions second. They're sort of trailing behind the mind. And the French philosopher Descartes said that emotions, and particularly fears, are products of bad ideas. You know, you have the thought first, and then you have the emotion. Well, all of that sort of about-faced in the late 17th century. And it was Theodore Ribot who said this: "States of feeling are not merely secondary and derived. They are not merely the byproduct of the mind. They are, on the contrary, primitive, autonomous, not reducible to mental states, and able to exist outside without the mind." Now that really struck me there, because our emotional states are able to exist outside of our mental awareness of them. We may not know how we're feeling. We may not know our emotional state. And yet our emotional state is driving our attitude and our disposition. You know how religious leaders and politicians love to manipulate fears. There's a lot of fear-mongering going on nowadays. If you're not careful, it's just in your face all the time. Because fear is so easy to tap in people. And sometimes you're being driven by it and you don't realize it until it's too late. And then you realize, you know, you hate someone or somebody, and you check it out and you'd say it's because you're afraid of that person. And then you'd have, "Why am I afraid of that person?" So, you know, the history of the church, now this sounds bad, but just have to say it. The history of the church, in my mind, has been one of just fear-mongering, because that's the best way to control people. And I'm going to tell you right now, the fear of doubt is the destroyer of faith. The fear of doubt is the destroyer of true faith. And the church is good at that. And I hate to pick on the church, but I mean, that's just the way I feel about it. Perfect love casts out fear. Well, perfect fear casts out love. Let's turn it around. So there's a lot of fear among you. The media, look at the media. We're bombarded all the time with fear-based media. We have a fear-based media. We have fear-based politics, fear-based religions. You know, and so it's there. It's everywhere. But you know, to me, that's something to reflect on. The mental state can exist without our mental awareness of it. William James, he did this thing about fear. He would analyze fear, and he said the first thing that we recognize in analyzing an emotion about fear are not mental states, but physiological states. We find first and most in analyzing fear, changes in the circulation, the blood vessels contract, the heart beats violently, and the breathing becomes shallow and more rapid. Like that. Those physiological reactions, now it's hard to believe that all that could be happening to a person and they wouldn't be aware of it. Well, that's what we call stress. I heard someone describe when the stress is like running from a bear, but there's no bear. You're just constantly running. And you're not relaxing. You're not breathing. So stress, anxiety, angst. We can be in that place and not even know it. Suddenly we realize we're taking short breaths. The feeling of fear does not precede these reactions, he says. It succeeds them. It is the consciousness of these physiological states as they are occurring and after they occur. In other words, he said, we don't meet a bear and then judge it best to run, he said. The running is automatic, and we would have to train ourselves not to run in the case of seeing a bear, a mother bear. So the bodily movements happen first. But then there is this fear. What about the fear of a rattlesnake or the fear of a bear or the fear of walking along the edge of a cliff? But what about the fear of someone whose skin color is different from ours? What about the fear of someone whose political views are different from ours? Or the fear of someone whose religion is different from ours? What about those fears? Well, those are called irrational fears. We know them as racism. And we know the other kinds typically as sources of forms of phobia, like Islamophobia. And perhaps we've been conditioned to react in these situations the way we do, as if we were to meet a bear or jump on a rattlesnake. As a child, I learned indirectly, not directly from my parents, but I learned indirectly to fear black people. I mean, segregation was just nothing but a product of our fear. So there are rational fears and irrational fears, and each of us has to determine when our normal fears cross that line and become unhealthy fears that will destroy our lives. Earlier, I quoted Franklin Roosevelt, "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself." Well, I boggled my mind for a long time trying to figure out what that meant. The only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Well, if we fear fear, then we're fearing, right? And I look it up on the internet, see what people said, and they said, "Well, he's talking about fear." Well, he's talking about the fear of fear. You know, it's like desiring not to desire. Well, you're desiring because you're desiring not to desire. So your fear of being afraid, you're still afraid. So I never said, what does that mean? Does anyone know what that means? Don't fear fear. Be afraid of fear. Anyway, I don't know what he meant by that. I gave up on trying. You know, you look on the internet, they'll say, he was being circular. And some say, he meant to confuse us. But I never found a real good answer, so I came up with my own. The way I would say that is the only thing we have to fear is that our normal, healthy, everyday, natural fears can slowly, if we're not careful, become phobias, hatred, greed, envy, spite, and destroy us. And there's such a fine line. And only you can figure that out for yourself. What are you afraid of? What are you really afraid of? You know, it was hard to believe that I was 30 years old until someone asked me that question. It never occurred to me to ask it myself, what am I afraid of? And so I think that we, every now and then, we need to stop and ask ourselves that question. What are you afraid of? Do you really need to be afraid of it? My journey ended in the psychiatric ward of Party Hospital back in 1980. I was hospitalized in the psychiatric ward for 3 days. And it was a struggle. But I heard a voice toward the end of that struggle. And it wasn't audible. I just heard it in my head. And it said, live your life. The voice said to me, as clear as it could be, live your life. And from that moment on, I knew that I could overcome this phobia of doing what I'm doing right now. It would be a long struggle, but I could do it. And so if you ever hear a voice, listen to it, especially if it says, live your life. Don't be afraid to live your life. Don't be afraid. Don't bury your talent. Because you're afraid of something or afraid of failure or afraid of, there's so many things that we can fear that we really don't need to fear. Perfect love casts out fear. That's true, and I believe it. Thank you all so much for listening to me and giving me this opportunity again to overcome my phobias.